All right. Good morning. It is just after 10 a.m. on Thursday, June 14th, 2012. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're here in the commission hearing room, 12th floor of the state capitol in Bismarck. We have a work session scheduled for today to discuss the status of the case, case number PU-11-697, Midcontinent Communications versus Missouri Valley Communications. And with that, why don't we identify ourselves for the record and for anyone who may be listening in. This is Tony Clark.
Good morning, Kevin Kramer.
Good morning, Brian Kalk.
Also joining us here at the table today.
Mark Grumman, Commission Staff.
Patrick Vaughn, Commission Staff.
Patrick Ward, the arbitrator from this matter.
And we also have a number of other individuals listening in the room here today. Again, for the benefit of everyone, work sessions are an opportunity for the commission to discuss a pending case before itself and with advisors and staff, and normally not an opportunity to receive any information, although we may direct a question from time to time if we have a specific one to a party. With that, Commissioner Kalk, this is in your portfolio, so I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Tony. I guess basically I quite honestly wanted to make sure we had this session before you departed us, because there's a lot of issues that I think that I know the three of us haven't had a chance to sit down and talk about it, but I guess my goal was to have Mark give us his update and then everybody else, but just really lay out the timelines that we want to hit with some of the key decision points so we can make sure we're keeping this moving down the road. So with that, I'd just maybe have Mark or Pat jump in.
Okay, thanks. As much as anything, I think it'll be a helpful exercise in, as you suggest, just kind of figuring out where we go from here, even though we won't be making a final decision necessarily today, because we haven't done a lot of these cases lately, so it's a bit of a primer for all of us. Mark?
So as concerning timelines, I'll just be specific to that. We received the jointly filed interconnection agreement on May 29th, which would make today day 16 after that. There's two things, two timelines that were perfected, I guess, at the time of the jointly filed interconnection filing. One is there's a 15-day comment period, which was up yesterday, and then there has to be a determination made by the commission within 30 days after the filing of the joint interconnection agreement, which would make it, I believe, around June 29th. So we're on day 16 of that 30-day period.
Let me jump in right off.
Sure.
The 15-day comment period, you say, has already expired?
Yes, that expired yesterday. So.
And so all those additional, I don't know what we want to call them, the letters that we got in, we would consider those as comments?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. So June 29th is the when we should have a decision on this?
100%.
Is there any extension or any way that could go out farther?
Not under our rules.
So it's our rules, though, right?
Yeah, it's our rules. True, yeah. And I haven't looked into it more, whether or not there's something under the 96 Telecom Act that would allow us such breadth, but not that I've seen.
Okay.
As far as the interconnection agreement itself, do you have any questions in particular? Again, we have a recommended decision by the arbitrator, who's, as you know, is here today. And essentially, we have comments from both parties concerning the viability of that interconnection agreement. And the interconnection agreement itself, again, was joint filed by the parties as a result of the recommended decision. So,
Pat?
I just wanted to tell you the next steps according, under the FCC's rules or the Act of the Telecommunications Act. Once the commission receives an interconnection agreement that's been arbitrated, the next thing to do is to approve or reject the interconnection agreement with written findings as to any deficiencies. And then the Act lists the grounds for rejection. The grounds for rejection would be if the agreement discriminates against a telecommunications carrier not a party to the agreement, if the implementation of the agreement or portion is not consistent with public interest, convenience, or necessity, or if you find that the agreement does not meet the requirements of Section 251, which is the requirements for interconnection of the different types of carriers. including regulations prescribed by the commission pursuant to 251 or the standards set forth in subsection D of this section, and that's the pricing section. And that's those are the factors. I don't know if the commissioners have had a chance to review the comments that have been filed, but just I guess staff would like to maybe if you have read them, get a
from the commissioners. I reviewed the comments. I didn't see anything that jumped out at me as something that we hadn't been touched, but there a lot of it was we think you should do this because it's good policy, yeah. Or it affects this. I didn't see any, unless I missed one, that brought up a new argument.
Yeah, that was my takeaway as well, that they're all comments on policy, politics, and more so and less on legal aspects of the case.
Public interest
yep.
types.
Mm-hmm.
So what about deficiencies? You talked about that we could, you know, approve or reject, or we could add things that we felt were deficient. Did either of you come up with things that you thought were maybe deficient in the?
In my review of the comments, and Mark can speak to this too as well, but in my review, I think Mid-Continent commented more on the arbitration agreement for interconnection, and they found that the interconnection agreement. They agreed with all of it, and I don't think Missouri Valley didn't dwell on the agreement as much. I didn't find anything where they thought they spoke to any deficiencies in the interconnection agreement. Just they spent more time on the public interest.
It's the and public the, policy standpoint of serving the whole of the donut as opposed to the
right
the
and more time on the requirement for interconnection. Which the commission, you know, may have addressed already in the order. So I don't know if the commissioners are, do you need more on public interest? I mean, one option, I suppose, is to get more information and more evidence on public interest. If you're thinking that you need more.
I don't feel I do. Okay. I mean, I think the people that best prepared to offer it have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you feel differently, Brian.
Well, I just was curious because you two, quite honestly, you two both lived the first time, if you will, we went through something very similar, and I was just, you know, in this forum to see where you guys were thinking because...
I think it even predates me, the last, the last big interconnection that I can think of, a contested one at least.
Wasn't there one when I first got here, though, there was one that was on appeal that was...
Well, that was the rural exemption.
No, that was rural exemption, yeah, that's right. And then ETC was just sort of wrapping up when I was getting here, but the first big interconnection agreement was the AT&T. And that kind of set the precedent, and that was AT&T US West, and that was... for me. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I hesitate to say too much because by the time this comes up for a vote, I will be a private citizen, so I won't
well,
I won't have a vote on
a special meeting at 11.
Well, unless we're doing it then.
Well, that's why I asked about the time frame because quite honestly that, you know, it's almost I'd like to hear more about what your thoughts are about what you think is the, you know, the better position. Because I can see, I could go both ways at this point. Mm-hmm. I could find arguments that would go that way out there, but I have a leaning a certain way. But just like we just went through with the North Central Otter Tail one, we sat down and went through, and you said, okay, we could go this way, but you know what, that just wouldn't hold up. And that's kind of where right now is that this is a policy shift, I think.
Mm-hmm. So I'd answer your previous questions. I didn't see any deficiencies. The nice thing about it is, and the good point about having this work session when we have is there's no rush. We still have 13 days to make a decision, so we can go through with a fine-tooth comb and look and see and make a recommended, perhaps just write a recommendation from Pat and I as far as what we feel the liability to arbitration.
I don't know what you think, Kevin, but...
Well, that'd be fine.
I mean, just as far as kind of thinking out loud. I mean, really where staff would want to focus in on is if it's a, from a public interest standpoint, is it a legally sustainable line of inquiry to go into the question of how the sufficiency of universal service funding in light of this issue of quote-unquote cherry-picking or serving the whole of the donut and not the entire service territory, and whether that's something that can be sustained if the commission were to decide that that's a relevant argument. One of the things that it's different in that it wasn't in an interconnection agreement, but it's a similar argument to the ETC arguments from several years ago, where wireless carriers were attempting to get ETC status. Pat, you live this, so you really remember it. But and originally the commission had denied ETC status to wireless carriers under kind of a similar public interest type argument, saying that universal service funding wouldn't be sufficient if you had multiple carriers coming in. And I mean, it was kind of a...
That's right.
It was kicked out on the basis of kind of second-guessing universal service funding scheme and whether it would be sufficient to maintain the existing carriers that were there if you allowed multiple ETCs. And in that case, the state Supreme Court, I think it was. I don't think it was a federal case.
It was appealed.
I don't think it was a state Supreme Court.
But wasn't a state court decision? I mean, decided that whichever court decided, the commission doesn't have the authority to sort of second-guess the FCC with regard to whether federal funds will be sufficient to...
Interesting.
I don't know if it's directly applicable or not.
Check it out.
But it's kind of a... It's...
Basic same argument, though.
It's a similar argument. It's a public interest argument based on whether universal service funding would actually be sufficient. If you make these decisions here, does it have an impact over here and how they're...
That was a ton of those letters, quite honestly.
Right.
Very good.
Judge, do you have anything you wanted to throw out to the...
Well, I'll just say, Mr. Groom had called and asked me to be here. I didn't know that whether I would be asked to do this, but I was retained by the agreement of both parties to arbitrate this matter, and we had a pre-hearing conference, and we set aside 2 days for this hearing, and we spent about a day and a half in the hearing. We had witnesses testify, and I drafted this recommended decision very carefully. It was an attempt to follow the law as set forth in federal statute and the state administrative code and FCC recent opinions, which have, I think, changed the landscape since the last time this was up here on the rural exemption issue. And this opinion does not address the rural exemption issue. This addresses Section 251A and B of the Act. I think, generally speaking, the federal law in this area favors competition. The federal law is the framework for the guidelines in the administrative code that North Dakota adopted. To the best of my ability, I attempted to pass on the evidence presented. I certainly was sympathetic to the arguments of Missouri Valley, but I felt constrained by the federal law and federal decisions that are out there. And, I do sense that the federal policy is a movement toward Bill and Keep with respect to the reciprocal compensation issue. And, all of those things in mind, there's not really much I can say today that goes beyond the analysis and the recommended decision. I would ask you to review that. And if you look at the briefs of the parties, the sense that I get is that these arguments that are being presented by the other rural telecoms in the state are, the same kind of policy arguments that were being made in the briefing, both on your motion to dismiss that you decided separately from me and at the time of my recommended decision. And so, I do think that, this is an area of rapidly changing technology and competition, and that seems to be way back when the Congress broke up AT&T, the environment they're trying to foster for telephone competition.
So we've got some direction to staff. Do you have any questions for
I know what I think
for Brian and Kevin? But
yep, I know what I need to research, so
okay.
I'll work on that.
And then we can work just like we did the other ones before, get something we can get it around. And then, quite honestly, Kevin and I can figure this out pretty quick, I think.
I think so.
So when is the 29th? It's not a Sunday or something like that, is it? To make sure. Friday.
And I'll verify those dates, too, but I think it's the 29th.
Shoot, that's 2 weeks away, light years away.
The 29th, that's the same day we were thinking about.
Having a meeting for the other stuff, too, right? Yeah.
Right, for the access tariffs.
We'll talk about it at our next meeting, but I'm guessing our meeting the 20th might slide back a week, too, because since we're having a special meeting. I don't know what you got cooking.
It looks like we're piling a lot of things in.
You saw that, too.
Yeah, we could sure look at that.
All righty.
Okay. Very good. With that, we will close the work session. The commission has a special meeting at 11 o'clock that we'll be back for. Thank you.